All I can get is static or variations on the central musical rhythm.
I only wish there was some way we could tell it to shut up. It's driving me crazy. And it keeps getting louder.
We have no way of estimating the volume this creature can produce.
The only logical solution is to listen to CJS at 90.1 FM. They broadcast from Burnaby Mountain in British Columbia. Let's tune in now.
Hot Docs Film Festival has just announced a temporary closure of its flagship Toronto theater, as well as staff layoffs amid financial struggles, painting a really dire picture.
Good evening. The Kitchener-Waterloo Symphony has been silenced after almost 80 years of performances.
Vancouver Folk Music Festival organizers say they're facing bigger costs than ever before, and they say the future of the festival is up in the air.
This year's Just for Laughs Comedy Festival in Montreal has been called off. The company behind it is canceling the festival as it tries to avoid bankruptcy. It's blaming a difficult financial landscape amplified by the pandemic.
For the past three decades, Artscape has provided hundreds of affordable living and working spaces for artists and creative entrepreneurs. The nonprofit now facing the threat of receivership.
Bell is set to pull out as the leading sponsor of the Toronto International Film Festival. Bell has been a festival partner since 1995 and has its name on the TIFF Bell Lightbox.
Well, that ain't good. Based on recent headlines, you might think that we are in the midst of a total cultural collapse in this country. Film festivals, comedy festivals, symphonies, cinemas, theater companies, arts magazines, all closing down or telling us that they're about to. Corporate sponsors are pulling out, as Scotiabank did from the Contact Photography Festival, as Bell did from the Toronto International Film Festival. Leadership teams are crumbling. People are quitting en masse or getting laid off. There's been a lot of dirty laundry aired in public from within these organizations. Open letters and accusations about mismanagement and workplace inequity within these arts organizations. It all sounds miserably dire. So just what is going on? And why is it all happening now? Going to try to find out. Today, I will be joined by an incredible panel of leaders from the arts world. We have people who have been running things in the worlds of Canadian film, theater, and music. I'm going to be joined by Jesse Wente, chairperson of the Canada Council for the Arts, former director of film programs at the TIFF Bell Lightbox, and founding director of the Indigenous Screen Office. Amy Blackmore, executive and artistic director of Mainline Theatre and the Montreal Fringe Festival, and president of the Canadian Association of Fringe Festivals. And Dan Seligman, creative director of the Pop Montreal Music Festival. If they do not know what this is all about and how to get past it, I don't know who would.
I'm Jesse Wente. Great to be here. I'm chair of the Canada Council for the Arts.
Amy?
Hi, everyone. I'm Amy Blackmore. I'm the executive and artistic director of Mainline Theatre and the Montreal Fringe, president of the Canadian Association of Fringe Festivals, and also an artist.
Dan?
This is Dan Seligman, co-founder and creative director of the Pop Montreal International Music Festival.
Thank you all so much for being here. I want each of you to give me your quick take on the timing of this. Why is this all happening at once? Jesse?
I mean, I think it's a collision of a number of factors that pre-existed the pandemic, but the pandemic certainly didn't help it. So you have a combination of audience change behavior since the pandemic, financial struggles that pre-existed the pandemic, as well as, you know, a fairly significant leadership change and a drying up of sponsorship, or at least sponsors moving their sponsor dollars elsewhere other than in the arts and culture. And all of that has made what was always a pretty tightrope walk sort of sector has meant that it a lot has fallen off that tightrope in the last little bit.
I also think that it comes from the fact that we all want to do this even better than we did before. I think a lot of arts organizations have learned a lot of lessons in the pandemic. We want to pay folks a living wage. We want to spend our time more effectively, efficiently. We want more time at home with kids. We want a festival and we want to make art in a better, more healthy kind of way. And I think that's also a huge part of this as well.
Dan?
I think, you know, even at the best of times, putting on a cultural endeavor is a incredible challenge. Labor of love, labor of passion, and it's never easy. It's so, you know, given all the factors that Jesse mentioned, especially coming out of COVID, I think there, like, in a way, there was like this false sense of security for a lot of established arts organizations, you know, receiving kind of COVID-related funding from the Canadian government. So, you know, we had all this money to spend, and there wasn't enough things to spend it on. And then all of a sudden it dried up, sponsorship dried up, inflation, everyone wanting more money, no one wanting to work as much. It was kind of like a perfect storm in a way.
Bell pulled out of TIFF, Scotiabank pulled out of the Contact Photography Festival, L'Oreal previously pulled out of Luminato. Seems like a trend. Why don't corporate sponsors want to fund the arts anymore?
Artists don't always say things or do things that corporations enjoy. I think for some, particularly in this moment when some are being called to question for, you know, their various investments in other arenas around the world by artists, that maybe it's a somewhat uncomfortable place if you're also sponsoring the venue where you're then going to be criticized. I suspect some companies aren't up for that.
It does seem like the world of politics and global crisis and conflict is a factor, is very present even in the most kind of community-based arts events. Dan, I know you were at South by Southwest and there were people protesting there. This is like, seems like there's always a political aspect to art. There probably should be. But this kind of like direct action, disruption, confrontation, is that a new thing for festivals like yours to encounter? Have you encountered this?
I mean, I was at South by Southwest when a bunch of the bands kind of dropped out last minute, and kind of like seeing it from the perspective of the organizers talking to the South by Southwest representatives. I mean, I definitely felt for them just on a production level, trying to navigate bands dropping out last minute, cancellations. It's stressful enough as it is, like putting on a major scale event. Having to deal with that kind of scenario is not an easy thing to do, for sure. The protests at South By, I think the military involvement in South By Southwest is specifically in association with their interactive, the tech conference, which is huge, you know, and they don't care about punk bands, you know, that's not why they're there. I applaud artists for having a voice, like, you know, I think there are ways to do it. I don't know how effective it is. Like, it's definitely something to think about when, like, you know, in relation to approaching sponsors, you know, any of the big banks. I mean, you scratch the surface of any bank and, you know, you're talking about the military industrial complex. So I don't know if it's just like a matter of educating people on the, like, all money is connected to war. Like, you know, so what do we do about that?
It's pretty tricky because it's, if it's not war, it's the oil industry or both. So it's sort of like, I guess you could say the answer is just vet your sponsors. But in Canada, the list of possibilities much smaller than in the States.
I guess the criticism is, it's like, okay, so are we just trying to burn down the entire system? And if that's the plan, then what do we do from there? You know, I think it's a conversation that all arts administrators, artists should be having, like, how do we create more equitable systems, and how do we continue to finance it? Because everyone wants to get paid. Everyone, you know, wants to have a career. Music is popular culture. It's a commercial culture. So, like, you're kind of compromising yourself even just entering the arena of commercial music. There's levels of hypocrisy. I don't even know where to begin, you know?
I mean, it's pretty tortured because if you're simultaneously trying to do right by pay equity and giving people living wages and everything like that, and then, you know, you're having a conversation about, like, well, our marquee sponsor, it turns out, has some percentage of their portfolio invested in, you know, untoward companies. Should we cut off, we're under pressure at the same time to cut off our biggest sugar daddy?
Yeah.
It's like, well, it ain't going to be there. Those two things don't really work with each other.
Yeah, no, it's a tricky one for sure.
Any thoughts on what Dan just said, Jesse?
Yeah, I mean, it's certainly tricky waters to navigate. You know, I think, you know, the speed at which it's happening, I think, is likely just reflective of the facts that information moves much quicker. And so you might sign up to do a festival and then not learn about the sponsorship until too late. Or maybe it's an organization, you know, I can't speak to those sorts of motivations. Ultimately, you know, where I come down is I think we need more art, not less, in these moments. Art is a great way for us to have the difficult conversations. It's a great sort of intermediary conversation starter, a way for us to enter into spaces that are uncomfortable, but to do so, to allow us to get into them. I think we're in a world where there's a lot to protest. There's a lot that deserves that sort of energy. Yet I think it's also important to keep in mind, how can we move forward? How do we get past? And is withholding art or a vehicle for conversation always the best way to achieve that? I don't know. You know, for me, I would rather everyone don't succumb to pressure or don't succumb to those things. Put on the plays, you know, we need more plays by Israelis and we need more plays by Palestinians. You know, we need it all. We need, you know, we don't need less of any of it. We actually just need more of all of it. As someone who has absolutely seen art shift the way Canadians think about their history on this land and their relationships with the nations that were here before Canada, I think that that is proof that that is what can happen.
I can't think of anything more punk rock than taking money from a bank and then making art with it that is a fuck you to their values and investments.
Pretty punk.
I don't know if you win by saying we're not taking your money. We're not taking your dirty money. I don't know.
Yeah, I think part of it is like, you know, half the time it's like the post that you make about it on Instagram will get more likes than any of your other posts. So they're like, you're almost like, you know, playing towards your own audience that have already are kind of sold on what you're about, you know. And you're not going out, especially like a festival like South by Southwest. It's, you know, thousands and thousands of people that have never heard you before. Like, you're not winning over anyone if you're not participating.
So I think that when you're dealing with, like, that's the ideal situation with a sponsor, is like, look, we fund the arts, it's going to be all kinds of stuff, it's going to be all kinds of opinions, and we're just here to fund it all and we love it all. But the Canadian arts establishment, these organizations are really reliant on bigger companies than that. They're reliant on banks, pretty conservative partners, who are not used to seeing themselves picketed. And I wonder if we are not uniquely vulnerable in Canada, especially at that kind of high fine arts level. As soon as you start talking to like the Scotiabanks of the world, if you're really dependent on a name sponsor like that, then if they just change their minds, they, you know, announced a $500 million commitment to Scotiarise, an initiative that aims to promote economic resilience among disadvantaged groups. Seems like a worthy cause, but also a pretty safe one. Has, like, Canadian arts built its home on shaky and temperamental ground and relying so heavily on these big corporate sponsors?
I mean, it doesn't make it easy. And, you know, recalling some of the discussions that I've had when I was parts of arts organizations that were thinking about sponsorship or seeking sponsors, there was some conversations around not seeking sponsors, you know, about not going that route, just because you can become somewhat beholden from a programmatical, like from a curatorial standpoint, to making sure that those folks are pleased when you're programming. And curators and artists don't really want to do that. Generally, they want to do whatever they want to do. And so it does present a lot of challenges. And I think that on the corporate side, I think, you know, that initiative you just named, that's where we're seeing a lot of the attention move. They're moving towards sort of, I guess, what they might view more direct social outcomes. You know, they're moving there where arts can be a bit murky.
Yeah.
Another side of it that we haven't touched on is that the philanthropy side has also declined. And part of that, quite frankly, is that we had a number of very significant deaths of major philanthropists in Canada over the last 4 or 5 years that have not been, we haven't seen younger, a new generation of those folks emerge to support. And, you know, arts and culture in Canada and in places like Canada around the world have often been heavily supported, not just by corporate sponsorship, but also private philanthropy.
Tell me about that. Who died?
I couldn't list all of them, but it's been a number because, you know, those folks do tend to be older. and we just went through a massive pandemic.
COVID killed the patrons?
Well, I'm not saying that, Jesse, because I don't know the results around it, you know, the reasons for everyone's passing, but it's definitely something that we've noted.
I'm a Philistine. I don't know who's funding the arts in Canada. I always had the impression, like, we just don't have them. Like if I think about America, I can go, okay, Getty, Guggenheim, Rockefeller, MacArthur, Whitney. Like, it just feels like that being a patron of the arts is a thing that really rich people do in the States. Where are our millionaires and billionaires at? It's like, I was trying to get data on this, and I saw, like, wow, $23.5 billion in private funding to the arts in 2021 in the States. And that's from 2021 from the Arts Consulting Group. That's the most recent data I could find. And I want to compare that against the Canadian data, and I couldn't find it anywhere. Like, I don't even know if anyone's, like, counting this. I don't know, like, who are the patrons of the arts in Canada. Even when we talk to fine arts, like, who has the big, like, fine art collections? It's banks collecting fine art in Canada.
Well, I'll give you one example. Like, the previous chair of the Canada Council for the Arts was a guy named Pierre Lassonde. He just put a whole new wing on a gallery in Montreal and is doing a whole bunch of other stuff. I suspect, Jesse, if you actually went to an art gallery or museum and looked at the names on the walls, you would actually see who the billionaires are in Canada who contribute, because they do it in exactly the same way that the folks in the States do, which is usually they want their name on a building.
Let's talk about something a little different. DEI, diversity, equity, and inclusion. I was reading this article in the Globe and Mail about Canadian Art Magazine. After 37 years, Canadian Art Magazine failed because they said they had lost advertising and fundraising revenue during the pandemic. It slowly shut down as it killed its print publication, stopped updating its website, and laid off most of its staff. But it had also been failing in another way. According to the Globe and Mail, Canadian Art Magazine had become increasingly embroiled in controversy over how to respond to accusations of systemic racism, both within its walls and in the art world beyond. In 2020, amid Black Lives Matter and racial reckoning in the arts, two of the magazine's former editors publicly slammed Canadian Art Magazine for structural racism and inequity and for kowtowing to wealthy white donors. The magazine's leadership tried to address these concerns. They made a renewed commitment to anti-racism. They put the word interim in front of the job titles of senior staffers, in front of their own job titles, including their new editor-in-chief, suggesting that all of these people were soon going to be gone. But before they could make these changes to their structure, their financial situation worsened. They laid off 12 staffers. Then the majority of their board stepped aside, saying that they had failed to address DEI principles. And so they were leaving to make space for a new board that would reflect the principles of decolonization, diversity, equity, and inclusion. So they promised that they were going to make all these big reforms. And all the people running the place said, we are going to be leaving to make space for new people. But then before they could make those changes, they announced that they were just ceasing publication. And finally, they shut down the whole thing altogether. What does the death of Canadian Art Magazine tell us about the situation that other arts organizations are facing?
From a sectoral perspective, the, you know, magazine publishing is more among the more fraught industries before we even get into a niche arts publication. It's a challenging industry these days. So that said, you know, I think staff, people who work anywhere, the pandemic and some of the crises that occurred within the pandemic, as well as a sort of different understanding of structural issues that we face in the culture, has meant some people expect very different things from their workplace than they did just a few years ago. And it can be a challenge for those workplaces to meet those expectations and to shift their operations to meet those expectations. And I don't know. I've never worked or written anything for the magazine, so I don't really know. I'm speaking purely as a outside observer and someone who used to have a subscription. You know, I feel its loss and certainly as a venue for all of those writers, but I don't know the specifics of all that happened, other than to say I think we are seeing all sorts of organizations struggle with a different way people are viewing work and where they work and how all of that fits into the world around them and their place in it and what they're trying to contribute too. And I think ultimately that is a healthy thing and good. It means that there's some challenges for folks to manage those things. But I think I'm still hopeful that that's actually good, that we're trying to move our organizations, move the way we operate in the world closer to sort of a right relations framework than just accepting for the job that we're going to do this. You know, so I think it's a tenuous thing. And I think if some of these stumbles or some of these challenges can get us to a place where we can all do it in a better way, then it'll be worth it.
I think Amy was kind of pointing to some of those pressures before, talking about people came back to work with a very different attitude about work. But it's just sort of one of the many things that like happened all at once, where issues of pay equity and issues of systemic racism that had, you know, been ignored, all of a sudden, everybody wants to do good. And I think that arts organizations tend to be progressive oriented. And they said, we're going to do, people made big proclamations. We're going to do good by this, and we're going to do good by that, and we're going to relook at this, and our leadership is not diverse enough. And they took on a lot of stuff at once, and they opened up the floodgates for a lot of things that people didn't feel comfortable complaining about or talking about earlier. And I wonder if we're talking about like organizations running on a shoestring that were struggling just to put on the show, if that is just not too much to bear all at once for some of these organizations. Amy?
Yeah, I think some organizations can maybe think about reevaluating how they're spending their time, you know? I think it's okay to scale back in order to be able to deal with some of these challenges. And we're seeing a lot of fringe festivals scale back in the amount of productions that are taking place this year so that they can make sure as organizations that they're investing in so much more in infrastructure, in human resources, in equity, diversity, in inclusion, accessibility initiatives. Like, all this is really important. But I think for me, the real challenge, though, is that like, you can have really good intention, and I think there is a lot of good, sound intention in a lot of organizations, but so many folks don't have training, and so many people who sit on boards of directors also don't have training. Maybe they know how to write a check really well, and that's awesome. I love those folks, but maybe they don't have experience in talking about what an anti-racist statement can look like. You know, I think that's my dream. You know, I mean, we all want more money for sure. I mean, that's kind of what we're talking about, but I also wish that cultural leaders, that we all just had a little more training and that we could kind of just get together and figure that out a bit, because I think we could accomplish more together that way.
Dan, what do you think?
At the same time, it's like most of us in the arts like didn't get trained. Like, I have a degree in religious studies from McGill. I didn't go to school in the music business. I kind of started the festival with a group of friends and didn't get paid for the first few years. Like, you know, it's kind of like any labor of love. You have to, you know, and I don't want to be one of those like old guys now, like, oh, the kids these days, they don't know an honest day's work, you know, but at the same time, it's like we're all in it because we love it, and we got to be able to work and like still treat like, you don't have to be an asshole. You can treat people fairly. You know, we're putting on an event. It's a lot of work. It's hard. So I think that's an important thing to recognize. Maybe those like DEI initiatives become just like more kind of, I don't know, like they become like more something you have to do instead of something that's like coming about because you are trying to be like better.
Yeah. I feel you in a Gen X way of like, and I'm really torn because I'm like, you know, if anybody from like indie culture, punk culture or hip hop, it's like, of course you do this for nothing. You could have gone to law school. You chose to work in the arts. Like, that's what we do. We work 80 hours a week and we get to do this. That's the prize. And you've got a generation of people who are like very forthright about like, I will not be exploited. And I want, you know, pay transparency and pay equity. And I'm not, you know, not doing, no, there's no free overtime. Like, a very different mindset towards work. And part of the time I'm like, yeah, they're probably right, you know, but it does completely change the dynamics and the economics of trying to make things happen on shoestring budgets. It's been brought up a few times that we have not yet dug into the government funding. I take it that there is wide consensus on this panel that the government should be spending a lot more money on culture, and I am not going to argue otherwise. We're here to talk about what is, not necessarily what should be. And while it might be wonderful if the government were to come to the rescue, and I think Hot Docs, before they basically said they're done, they made a Hail Mary public plea hoping the government would come bail them out. Didn't happen. I don't know what this government's going to do about all of these organizations that are in trouble at once, but the safe money is on a conservative majority for the next federal election. And I think you're probably going to be looking at a government that's going to want to do a whole lot less. I don't think that, the trend in corporate spending is going to be turning around anytime soon. Is there any reason to be hopeful here? Or are we really looking at a broad culture collapse, at least when we talk about what has made up Canadian culture, the symphonies, museums, festivals, everything that for decades, you know, institutions that have been around a long, long time, I'm seeing a lot more blood in the water ahead of us.
I don't think we can probably paint all patrons of the arts at symphonies and orchestras as necessarily liberal red. So I think there might be a miscalculation in terms of who makes up a conservative constituency and what they actually look like and what they're interested in. I'm not sure they're all anti-arts people. And the reality is the biggest threats to Canadian culture do not exist on this land. They are from outside forces, giant corporations that are seeking to reshape all of the systems on the globe to serve their purpose. And like, yeah, we can have a government that decides, great, let's do that. Their power will quickly go away under that rubric. So I think they will learn that actually there is a reason why we protect these things. There is a reason why we need these things. And they will invest. I would encourage them that I think we're in a moment. We were emerging out of a crisis. If we think of the crisis of a bowl, we're on the lip, which means it's very easy to fall right back into the bowl. It's just one misstep. And I think in those moments is opportunity to grow, because we are not at the bottom of the bowl. We're somewhat out of it. And so a massive reinvestment, and I do mean massive, the type of investment that, you know, Canada made 120 years ago when they built what you are now saying is the Canadian culture that's disappearing. It was built 120 years ago by massive investment from the government. And we could do the same thing. And no matter what the party, I think there's a way we can advocate and point out to them. And I think they will also learn once they're in power that there is actually a reason why you made that investment. There's a reason. Because if you want all of the other stuff, the oil, the gas, all the other stuff to flow, it's not that people have to be this show, but we do have to be able to communicate and have some commonality. And you may laugh, but some of that is like, we know a song. We share the experience of a song when it comes on the radio. That allows us all of this the grease in the wheels of all this other stuff. So I think it will behoove them to support it, even if they right now claim that they want to get away. I think it's a very easy way to try to get elected.
So maybe when Pierre Poilievre becomes prime minister, he'll hear a song on the radio and he'll just have a rethink of this whole thing and say, actually, massive reinvestment in the arts is what's going to happen. And at the same time, a whole new generation of conservative patrons of the arts will find their philanthropy and the Grinch's heart will grow 10 sizes that day. You are an optimist. Amy, what do you think? Is that where your optimism lies?
I mean, so I think that we can advocate for ourselves as much as we want, and I think we need to continue to do that. But I think we need to get everybody else on board. It's about the consumers, right, to a certain extent. Arts don't exist without the audience. And there's nothing more magical when somebody interacts with the arts. And I think that if we all did a little bit more work to get the greater population to advocate with us, for us, I think it would really help. The same way that, you know, we advocate for better healthcare, that folks advocate for more money for food banks. You know, I think that really we have a role to play in making sure that the greater population understands how important we are, because I know that we get it. We totally get it. But if we were just a little louder, if there was a little more education in that impact realm, maybe that could also help.
I'll tell you where my optimism lies, because everything we're talking about is so depressing. If you heard this conversation up to this point, you might think that, like, Canada is really culturally in trouble right now. Maybe it is. But if you look at culture itself, not cultural institutions, not the cultural establishment, but Canadian culture, it seems to be thriving. Canadian actors and directors are working at the top levels of Hollywood. Canadian music is at the top of the charts. Canadian-made video games are doing huge business. Canadian comedians continue to break out internationally. Canadian creators are overrepresented on YouTube and TikTok and Instagram. Is it possible that Canadian culture doesn't need these arts institutions in order to thrive anymore.
Culture